Hey, Denver, it's time for this bi-weekly meeting of the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee of Denver City Council. Join us for the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee starting now.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. My name is Chantel Lewis, and I represent the residents in District 8. Welcome to our first Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. I will say I'm excited to say that it's a lot less than the biz committee. So super excited about that. And I'm also excited to chair this committee. With that, we can do a round of introductions. And I'll start with you, Pro Tem.
Okay. Hi, good afternoon. I'm Romero Campbell, Southeast Denver, District 4.
Good afternoon. I'm Sandoval, Northwest.
Clora Lidres with Lucky, District 7.
Good afternoon. Kevin Flynn, Southwest Denver's District 2.
Good afternoon. Chris Hines, Denver's Perfect 10.
Stacey Gilmore, District 11.
Thank you. And Councilman Hines is the vice chair of this committee as well. With that, we have one briefing, which is DEN's Alternative Energy Feasibility Study, which we're very excited about. So I'll let you all introduce yourselves and jump in.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Phil Washington, the CEO of Denver International Airport.
Good afternoon. Dave Laporte, Chief Operating Officer at the Denver Airport.
Good afternoon, Kevin Forget, State and Local Legislative Advisor at the airport.
So, Madam Chair, thank you for having us, you and the committee. This is an information brief that we want to provide to you. And let me start with sort of our first slide that talks about the current state of electricity and energy at Denver International Airport. And you know many of these facts, but I think it bears mentioning anyway. You know that we are one of the busiest airports in the world, Colorado's largest economic engine. And we are looking way ahead, sort of our vision, Vision 100, to serve 100 million annual passengers in the coming years, and also 120 plus million as we go forward. Because of that, our current state, which we'll talk about in a minute in terms of electricity and energy, and because of our demand for power, We have been discussing the idea of a feasibility study for small modular nuclear reactors. We have a capital improvement program that we have briefed to this committee before. This is a 12-year capital improvement program, $12 billion, and the demand for energy and power becomes very, very important for all of that. We also, in addition to those projects, we also are preparing for innovative advanced air mobility in the form of flying taxis, in the form of eVTOL, which is vertical takeoff and landing, and many of the other projects that will require power. Currently, the airport the current state is about 45 megawatts of power that we currently use. The consolidated rental car facility that we brought to this committee some months ago and you approved alone will take 40 megawatts of power. And so you can see the need for us to be thinking about flexible and sustainable power. And so I wanted to set that stage before we got into the presentation. Next slide. We put this slide towards the front, the Center of Equity and Excellence in Aviation, because this innovative approach is going to be incubated within SEIA, with the creation of career pathways for young people to understand how small modular nuclear reactors work, to understand the opportunity around that specialty in terms of employment later on. I'm happy to say we've got three or four, maybe five interns here that we asked to do a research study on small modular reactors. I threatened them by saying I was going to have them do this presentation. but they're more than capable of doing it. But
Director Washington, can we introduce them?
Absolutely.
I'd love to know who they are.
Yes, please. You can introduce yourselves.
Come to the mic.
One at a time.
So cute.
Hi, I'm Jaden Knight. I'm the Civil BIM intern in asset management.
Hi, I'm Rylan Newman. I'm a sustainability and waste diversion intern at DEN.
Hi, I'm Victoria Sprangowski. I'm with the Systems Integration Management Office until May.
And I'm Morgan Edstrom, the systems intern within DEC.
Thank you all for your work. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And so the vision is sort of consistent with the slides you see up here. I won't go each one of those, but the idea to create career pathways in this space becomes very, very important to us. So we propose to release a request for proposal for a feasibility study to determine the viability of small modular reactors. That RFP went out at 8:18 this morning. So it is on the street right now.
8:18.
I think it was about 10 seconds. And so we're asking, and we'll get into this a little bit more, but we're asking the successful proposer to answer a number of questions that we'll go over. The RFP or the study time will be 6 to 12 months, and then we will have some valuable information back. I'm going to ask Dave Laporte to kind of go over the specifics in terms of capacity needs that we have right now and currently require.
Yeah, thank you, Phil. So as Phil mentioned, our current demand is 45 megawatts, about 45 megawatts of load, and that's for the airport and the tenants currently. Phil mentioned that the consolidated rental car facility will take 40 megawatts, but I want to add on to that a little bit. Ground support equipment that the airlines use and that we use at the airport will add another 60 megawatts of demand. Electrical vehicle charging for our customers that park in the garages or parking lots. We don't know exactly what that demand will be yet, but we know it'll be a significant demand moving forward. Our real estate development, depending on how that works out, that could be a heavy electrical load that is needed down the road. So we have been working with Xcel to try and estimate what that load could be. And what we have found is that according to the Xcel study, that we think we're going to need 235 additional megawatts. The high-end estimate would be an additional 400 megawatts. And that doesn't even include new concourses that we might build, new runways that could be built, advanced air mobility that Phil mentioned, the vertical aircraft, and any unknown future development down the road. So there are a couple of reasons why we're interested in small modular reactors. The first is earlier this year, House Bill 1045 deemed nuclear energy as clean energy. And we think that that's important and that fits into our goals down the road. What we're thinking about is a small modular reactor, which is a nuclear fission reactor, not a fusion reactor. These things are built off-site in a highly controlled environment and shipped to the deployment site. They have varying electrical output, meaning that they are modular. We can add on more modules as our demand grows. And we would plan for that moving, you know, as we get into the project. And these things have very advanced safety features. So they are not the typical cooling towers that you think of when you think of Three Mile Island as an example. They provide passive safety features So they have gravity-fed coolant and a lot of coolant. These things are submerged in about 3 million gallons of coolant. They can function without external power sources. And so when you think of what happened in Fukushima as an example, that was because they lost power to the nuclear reactor. These don't require external power sources. They're much simpler designs with lower core power. So the risk for something to go bad is much lower. And I already mentioned the additional coolant that they have. The reasons that we want to explore these modular reactors are many. The first of those is we are committed to becoming the greenest airport in the world and most resilient. If you think about what happened in London Heathrow earlier, well, I guess it was late last year, they lost power to the airport and shut down the airport. That even affected the Denver airport because the flight that was scheduled to go to London couldn't make it. Madrid Airport was shut down because of a power failure, and we want to be much more resilient and kind of control our own destiny. Obviously, we're all very interested in carbon-free energy alternatives. This contributes to the city and county's goals of being net zero by 2040, and it helps our sustainability and resilience goals to meet Vision 100 that Phil mentioned earlier. It provides us a lot of flexibility. I mentioned that these things are modular or stackable. We can start with one modular reactor if this turns out to be the right answer. We think that that could provide somewhere around 75 megawatts of power for the airport. And if our demand grows, we can add another module to that. And it could support non-aeronautical revenue in the form of future development like data centers, as an example, heavy manufacturing. We, you know, are thinking about how we produce sustainable aviation fuel down the road, and this could help us with that. And of course, we control the schedule for those additional modules. I mentioned House Bill 1040 earlier. That was signed into law on March 31st of 2025. It's now part of the state's efforts to reduce the carbon dioxide emissions and transition to a more sustainable energy system. In addition to that, though, there have been several presidential actions in the form of executive orders that have come out. Most of those happened on May 23rd of this year, which promote modular reactors and also deem nuclear energy as green energy. The other key thing that these presidential orders did was instituted an 18-month maximum time to approve or deny applications to construct and operate new reactors. So obviously a very clear signal that we want to move in that direction. The study will review state and federal regulatory requirements. You know, we're interested not only in regulatory requirements, but security, safety requirements, PUC requirements, things like that. And those have all been spelled out within the RFP. Back to you, Phil.
Yeah, thank you, Dave. I mentioned this earlier, but this is a depiction of the job estimates for SMR. So this is about jobs, and career pathways in many, many ways. The opportunity to create a specialized sort of industry for young people that are in this region is a huge component of this, and we will do that through apprenticeships, through internships, and through the design and build of an SMR and the maintenance of an SMR as well. Next slide. Lots of benefits here, small footprint. One of the big benefits is we have more land than any airport in the world, except for one in Saudi Arabia. So the modular nature of building this is very doable for us, meaning we can build in another part of the airport and bring that construction, if you will, to the site is something that we are looking at right now in other projects as well. So modularity becomes a huge piece of this, and we can do that with the land that we got. These small modular reactors require a very small footprint, footprint of 30 to 35 acres. We would think underground. These modular reactors can be built between 3 and 5 years. As Dave, I think, mentioned, the study will take 6 to 12 months. Obviously, we would come back with the results of the study, but the benefits are incredible. The timing of this, and Dave alluded to a little bit of this at the federal level and at the state level, but we just put out a press release just this morning that we are going to invest in horizontal infrastructure for the parcels and the real estate areas that we have. In other words, developers come and they bid on some of our parcels. They have to pay now for the utilities and all of that. That press release this morning talked about how we are going to invest in that horizontal infrastructure in the parcels to attract future developers, whether they are data centers, whether they are any type of development that is compatible with the airport. But this whole idea of small modular reactors help to power that additional infrastructure in addition to our project, our future projects. It helps fund or it helps power that other infrastructure for developers as well. Of course, they would pay for that. And one other thing that I want to mention is this in no way delays or stops or slows down any of the alternative energy options that we are currently doing. We are going to bring to you on August 21st what we call Solar 10. This is another solar array that will have 18 megawatts. And so we don't want this to seem that we are stopping our other efforts, meaning solar and our performance energy contract and those types of things. We're just adding this option to the mix. Next slide. Some of the areas that the feasibility study will examine, won't read these off, but it's very, very comprehensive. What regulatory details do we need? What kind of approvals do we need? How much will something like this cost? Where can we pursue grants from both the state and federal entities as well? Next slide. The timeline, I mentioned 0818 this morning. The RFP was released. We will select the vendor in Q4 of this year. We will come back to you in Q4 of this year and lay out the results of that study and then council action, contract award as we move forward. I think that is the last slide. So with that, we will turn it back to you, Madam Chair.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate the presentation. We have everyone in the speaking queue, so I just put you in there because everyone else was already in. Okay. And we'll start with Councilman Hines. Councilman Hines, followed by Council Member Gilmore.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Director Washington, thank you so much to you and your team and the interns who are here today. When I started in 2019, Kim Day was the CEO of DEN, not long after you interviewed for the job. And I don't know if you remember the phone call that you and I had, I do. And one of my requests was, will you permanently close and plug the oil wells that are on Den property? And you said that at the time you said, yes, that is in line with your vision and values to become the greenest airport in the world. So I want to thank you for one, making that commitment true, and making sure that all of those wells are plugged and taken care of. And also, I want to thank you for this announcement that I believe is in line with what you told me during your our conversation when you were thinking about joining our airport as its CEO. I recognize that people might ask about ask you to prioritize power sources that are well researched, and I want to thank you for doing that too. Xcel is a big partner at the airport. I want to thank you also for leaning into some of the green sources. You mentioned another solar array, Solar 10, I think is what you called it.
Solar 10, yes.
Which add another 30 megawatts. I want to thank you for performing this research as well, because undergoing this study, because we don't know, but certainly this would be in line with the goal of becoming the greenest airport in the world. Recognize that it would be great if we had already started this process. We haven't. Now's a great time to start it and actually do the investigation and see if it makes a whole lot of sense. So and then you mentioned the power failures at Madrid and Heathrow airports. Obviously, those are very close to very comparable situation to Den, but. I remember working 25 years ago for Silicon Valley companies with the rolling blackouts that were happening throughout the state of California. And I also moved away from the great state of Texas before the power failures there as well. And so it's really important for us to have mission critical, use a military term, mission critical and redundant systems, especially something as critical as is making sure that we have power in what is you mentioned the largest economic driver of the Rocky Mountain region. I can't find a better engine in the time zone. I believe Den is the largest economic driver in the mountain time zone. So can't find another spot that's better. So last thing I want to say, this is all compliments for you. I promise I don't work for Den. Yeah. Just the last thing I want to say is thank you for working in SEIA, the Center for Equity and Excellence in Aviation, and having this as an opportunity for Denver to be a national or maybe even global leader in the research and implementation of a technology that I think makes a whole lot of sense for us to at least study, if not implement. So. Thank you. Some of that's informed from all my years on BIS. I'm really excited to be at the table with you in committee again. So thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Councilmember Gilmore, followed by President Sandoval.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the presentation on this. You had alluded to it a while back about something, and I first want to thank the interns that have worked on this. I hope it helps you with your careers and everything, the research. Appreciate it. My first question is, where does Den currently get its water?
Denver Water.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Just looking at a quick look here, the water usage for one reactor is 250 to 400 gallons of water to cool it. And so I guess where are your conversations with Denver Water, since you are so prepared and, 8-0 whatever you said, the RFP was put out on the street, I guess. What's the conversation with Denver Water currently?
I have had conversations with the CEO of Denver Water early on as we were thinking about this, and we will be collaborating with him and his team, but he does know about this announcement, and the conversations that we've had have been very, very productive, and I would envision more of those at the technical level as well.
Okay. Have you talked about water rights and that Denver doesn't own all the water. Denver has a certain amount of water rights that are allocated. The rest of the water that comes off the mountains in the watershed is drinking water for people who live out on the northeastern plains of Colorado, and then that moves into Nebraska and Kansas, et cetera, to grow our food and for drinking water. And so where are the conversations about water rights? And I'll put it out there publicly, the opportunity then, I think, for other states to sue Colorado and Denver for taking water out of that system upstream. And so I want to put that out there as a real question. And can these reactors utilize recycled water, or does it have to be drinkable water?
That is one of the questions that will be embedded in the RFP. You know, whether and what type of water that we can use. We have not had those technical discussions yet with Denver Water, but we plan to.
Okay, good deal. You know that the reason the airport is located where it is located is one, because we built all around the old airport and had residential very, very close. So, you know, if you've been in Denver any amount of time, you just know when the planes went over in Park Hill or in Montbello, you stopped talking for that period of time, and it shook the windows, it shook the walls, etc. That's why we, with Mayor Pena, had the forethought to put it out on the northeastern plains, and there's a good barrier of land out there, but it's also was attractive land out there because it was also next to a Superfund site, which was the Rocky Mountain Arsenal National Wildlife Refuge. Now, the Superfund site came around because the U.S. Army and Shell Oil didn't line their drainage basins, and so they just put all that fluid into an earthen basin, and it seeped down, as liquids will do, and it polluted the water table, and polluted the water table so greatly and decimated it that anybody on the west side of the Rocky Mountain Arsenal National Wildlife Refuge, all those new homes that are built out there, they're all required to have reverse osmosis water treatment in their homes because they cannot drink the water. And so I bring that up because when I do a quick research on it, the reactors have to be submerged in up to 3,000 gallons of coolant. And, you know, I have to make the assumption that they will be lined. Well, we don't really have EPA regulations anymore since, you know, we're picking and choosing what of this administration we want to take advantage of and we don't want to take advantage of. And so I would hope that they're lined, and that, but I want to know fully from this RFP how we as a city are going to dispose of 3,000 gallons of coolant that will most likely need to be changed out on a regular basis. Is that going to be stored on Den property? Is Den going to have to build a warehouse to store this coolant somewhere? We don't, as a country right now, have the infrastructure set up to store waste from these sort of activities. And so I would just like to understand, is that coolant going to be put into 50-gallon barrel drums, and it's going to be driven from Den, and they're going to get on Pena Boulevard, they're going to come around on I-70, and they're going to come through first Green Valley Ranch, they're going to come through Montbello, they're going to come through Central Park, Park Hill, going all the way up if they've got to go over the Rocky Mountains to deliver this waste to be stored somewhere else. I don't believe you can put it on a plane and fly it because of the risks of it. You have to truck it somewhere. So that's another question that I have. And then I really appreciate, you know, the economic engine and trying to keep up with, you know, doing more. And Do we have still 800 days of funds on hand for DEN?
It's probably something less than that.
Okay, right, so we'll say 700 days of operating for DEN. So pretty good, pretty good. But you know, when you bring up the data sites, I think about what happened most recently, that I think that there was a data site that was going to be proposed in GES or another community. And folks, thank you, Council President, and folks, rightly so, were like, well, wait a minute. We need to talk more about this, especially with water being a finite resource. The planet does not create more water. We don't. We have a finite resource of that water. And so where we are talking with climate scientists and drought, we're going to have to start talking seriously as a city and a state in the next 5 years, how we're going to make sure that we have enough water to grow crops on the Northeastern Plains. That's an issue now, today. And so I'm just interested in kind of where this is going. But with data sites and the amount of water that they take, but also the noise that is associated with them, the additional pollution that is associated with them, and the optics, I guess, Phil, of Denver International Airport being located on the northeastern plains of Colorado. And it is situated right next to Rocky Mountain Arsenal National Wildlife Refuge, a former Superfund site. And there's been no conversation with the community before this RFP was released. There was no conversation with me as the elected council representative for District 11, and I represent the airport in my council district. And so it's curious that the airport has decided to just jump over the community and release an RFP before 8:05 a.m. this morning and be so excited and proud about it, but that you haven't talked to the elected representative to let me have the courtesy to ask some of these questions. But now I have to ask them on camera in front of everybody. And I hope my constituents are listening as well, because when this hits the news, they don't want to talk to Phil Washington. They'll want to talk to me. And you have put me in a very interesting position. Cool, cool. My next question is, you know, we lost the Coca-Cola deal because of not having energy out there. I think the airport, quite frankly, got over your skis. You thought you were ready. You thought it was going to go. And there was no agreements with Xcel or others to get power out there. And I've heard the finger pointing and back and forth. It doesn't matter. The national news is Denver lost the Coca-Cola deal. We lost it. So with that education of myself around the hodgepodge of Adams County, Arapahoe County, et cetera, is the quickness of this so that the airport can develop the land around the airport more quickly, and or my community is hearing rumblings that the land swap with Westside, that there's a fiber optics line that runs through that parcel, and they can't do what they want to do out there. And so to get this deal across the finish line, we're going to jump right in to President Trump's lap and say, oh, cool, nuclear reactors. We have very vague EPA regulations now. Let's do nuclear. Let's do this. And so I guess, can you answer to me, where is the West Side land swap deal? And is there currently power to that parcel of what, 100 and how many acres was it?
140 or so.
Okay. Is there power to it? Is there water, sewer, electric to it?
That I don't know, whether there's power to that right now. Should I begin to respond? Where do I start,
I guess? Okay, so you don't know if there's power. Is there water to that site? I mean, it's owned by the airport, correct?
Yes.
Oh, is there somebody from real estate here that could maybe give us a little background on, I mean, it's your land. Mm-hmm. Is there water out there?
It's actually city land right now, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct?
Well, I assume land. That Den and the city are related in some way.
Yeah. Well, if I could start on some of your questions. First of all, apologies.
Well, so then I'm assuming then that the answer to there's no water, there's no sewer, and there's no electricity out to that site. If we're not going to answer.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the question on the table.
You
don't know.
I would have to turn to our real estate folks to answer that question.
Okay.
Of whether there is water. I don't know. We can get.
Can we maybe have somebody from real estate come up and answer the question?
I'm going to just intervene. I think if we ask Angela from the mayor's office, and then she maybe can ask Lisa Lumley, because I've been asking these same exact questions, but I've asked Lisa Lumley in these.
But Ken Cope is the real estate representative for Denver.
Right now. I don't think he's here right now.
Okay.
But we can get you that information.
All right.
Let me start by apologizing for you not knowing. I mentioned this in a meeting of this committee.
Oh, I knew it was happening, the RFP. You know what, Madam Chair, I have no other questions. I'm good. I don't think, if you don't have your real estate person here to answer the questions and you're not communicating with me and you're not communicating with my community, I look around this table at any of my colleagues. And I don't think any of you would let that fly. I don't think you would appreciate when you represent an area for there not being any open communication, especially when you know I'm a wildlife biologist, Phil. Mm-hmm. You know I have spent my entire life on conservation, and you're suggesting something that gobbles up water that we have not fully explored or even mentioned to my community. And I think the very real question out there is the quickness of this to get the west side land or the swap land ready for them to take hold of it. Because I'm concerned about that, because this council just referred to the ballot for the Vibrant Denver Bond parks. Parks, an immense amount of money for parks. And so it looks curious with the quickness of this and that land swap not being done right now. And I am not a barrier or a backstop for any city agency. I am elected to represent my constituents who are around this table right now, and they don't want something done to them. They want it done with them to have the conversations. And so I needed to put those questions out there because I'm concerned if this falls through, what is that going to happen in November to that initiative, when we maybe didn't have our I's dotted and our T's crossed? And I know that is not fully your responsibility, Phil, but it's just curious on me spending 3 years of my life on Coca-Cola and 2 years prior to getting the Far Northeast neighborhood plan amended to have Coca-Cola come out to the neighborhood. And I feel like I've been a darn good partner because we not only had Coca-Cola, we had Pepsi, and we still have Pepsi. And that's going to put an additional 250 semi-truck trailers daily on Pena Boulevard in our neighborhood. Or they could go through Green Valley Ranch and go all the way down Tower Road to I-70, but that's not the communities that I think any of us want either. And so it's very curious, and I appreciate the time. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Councilwoman. Sorry that RTD just popped out of me. Director Washington, do you want to maybe revisit the RFP and the feasibility study and the timeline? Because I think it might address some of the things I've heard here. And then next up is Councilmember Alvidres.
I thought it was president.
Listen, honey.
Okay, all right. Go ahead.
It is. Yeah.
What I will say is that this proposed study action has nothing to do with the West Side land swap. Nothing. The other thing that I will say is, as we mentioned, the RFP is sort of looking forward, looking at the current state and looking forward to see what the possibilities are that we'll bring back here. There is nothing with the feasibility study that will commit us to anything. And so we see this information brief or action with the RFP as just getting smarter. And information that we will take out to the public, because there will be a public education part of this, but we have to have the facts that will come through the feasibility study. The other thing that I will say is that we have four major themes as we embark on the study itself. One is safety, one is security, one is cost, and one is compliance. Four major themes that are sort of the anchors of how we're looking at this. EPA regulations were mentioned. We have made a commitment to this city council that regardless of what the federal requirements are, especially around EPA, or regardless of what those are, we are committed to doing everything that we possibly can to, one, educate the public. We said that with Pena Boulevard when there was a question about environmental justice requirements that are no longer required at the federal level. I came to this committee and I said that regardless of what the requirements are to not do EJ or environmental justice, we're still gonna do it and we're gonna pay for it. And so the same thing applies here. We are not gonna do anything, regardless of what the federal regulations say, that are incongruent with the community values. And so we are just looking to gain knowledge on this. We're going to bring this back, and we'll discuss it when we have the results.
Thank you. Council President Sandoval, followed by Council Member Alvidres.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Sure.
Break it down for me a little bit more. So are you, so the RFP went out. Do you not have to get approval to do the feasibility study? Because I thought that, like, when we do other feasibility studies with other departments, if you spend over a certain amount of money, we approve those. So is that not the case? How is that not the case here? I'm confused by that.
We do not need council approval to release an RFP.
Not the RFP, but the key areas of this feasibility study on slide 11. I'm confused on the, so I understand the RFP. I guess I'm confused on the two things that we're talking about here. We're talking about one, the RFP went out, and then on slide 11, it talks about the feasibility study. So I thought, if I'm not mistaken, that we had to approve, how much is the feasibility study?
We have an internal cost estimate of about $1 million, but we...
Yeah, so I thought that any of that would have to come through City Council for approval for those kind of action items. I could be wrong, but that's what I've never seen a feasibility study over 500. Mm-hmm. Anything under, you all know, under 49999, you have to approve it. But if it's a million, I think that there's a missing step here that we actually would have to approve that.
Yes.
Yeah, so once the RFP is responded to and there's a proposal and a contract, the contract to move forward with the feasibility study would still come through the City Council, the normal City Council process.
Okay, so the RFP is for the feasibility study.
That's correct.
Got it.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, so can I get a copy of the RFP? Because I have questions about what I would like to, similar to Councilwoman Gilmore's point. If I'm not mistaken, tell me if I'm not a scientist. Lord knows that. But I thought that these small SMRs, that they produce radioactive waste. Am I not, is that correct? Because all the research I've done, that these produce radioactive waste, and that to get rid of radioactive waste, there's like, that's the reason why they're so controversial, is there's no long-term disposal solution in the United States right now. Is that correct? So within the RFP, do you have how would they get rid of the radioactive waste?
We have those questions in the RFP.
Okay. And then do you have in the RFP how this would have like significant environmental, like, so one of the other concerns with radioactive waste is that it leads to significant environmental damage. I think that that's how, I don't want to like get these mixed up, but Denver has 4 Superfund sites. We have the one that Councilwoman Gilmore mentioned, and we have 3 in Glovillery and Swansea, and one of them in like off of Vasquez was from radioactive waste. It was a train that was taking radioactive waste from, where is that place outside of Boulder?
Rocky Flats.
They were moving waste of the 70s from Rocky Flats, like radioactive waste, and the train cars derailed and in Glowville off of Vasquez. And that became a Superfund site. And so that's why this is so controversial, is because one of the reasons in the neighborhood that my family grew up in was because of radioactive waste being taken from Rocky Flats. Sorry, I haven't thought about that. So is that within the RFP?
Yes, it is. And the other thing that I should mention is that we envision this, it was put out as a task-based type contract. And we did that on purpose so that as we learn more, we can add or subtract whatever we want.
To the RFP.
Correct.
Okay.
To the task.
To the task. Okay. And then, my other question was also going to be in line with the water, because it does take same as the data centers. They just use so much water that one of the conversations that we had in a different committee that comes to City Council, it was the South Platte committee, and we have the wastewater facility that's out on the edge of town by the National Western Center come in. And what they have found is they've found new technology after all processing all the water to cool it down, but it's still not cool enough as it enters into the South Platte River. And because of the damage that we have done in our own wastewater treatment center, right? We added for years warm water to the South Platte River, which changed the whole riparian system in the South Platte. So I would just, is it in the RFP on how they would get the water? Because if we put the water back in, or if it uses recycled water, cooling of that water is so crucial. And yet, how would they cool the water without using energy, right? I don't know. That's why I'm like, I did as much research as I could on this topic before we got here, but that was another concern. Is that within the RFP?
So I think it's a great point. And that specific question is not listed in the RFP.
Okay.
What we did was made it a task-based contract and said, these are the kinds of things that we're thinking about right now.
Yeah.
But we're able to add.
I think just knowing that we had the wastewater treatment facility, I know I'm getting their name wrong, Metro Wastewater Treatment Facility, and they've asked us all to go out for a site visit. I already had gone out there, but their whole process of cooling water was, I don't know if you've all been out there, it's all these waterfalls and all these systems, so I would want to make sure that whoever's doing the study is reporting back on to you all and to us on how they're cooling the water. And then one of the other aspects that if it's in the RFP, technology has changed a lot. There's been a lot of advancements. I don't think anyone in the 70s thought that a rail line was going to crash and derail and end up having a whole Superfund site in Globeville. I just studied that in my undergrad, so I know a lot about that site. In the RFP, how do we make sure that accidents or malfunctions don't happen because of the radioactive substance that is there? And I know that you all are regulated on a much different level. You're not just regulated by the city, you're regulated by the state, and you're regulated by the federal government, right? I don't know if within the FAA, if that's right, if you're regulated by the FAA, is that right? Sorry, I had a long night on Monday. All these acronyms are like, so the Federal Aviation?
Oh, yeah, Federal Aviation and the Department of Energy.
And the Department of Energy. I don't know what type of regulation. So if you could send this committee regulations that have been in, not just the new ones that you cite in the PowerPoint from May of 2025, but regulations regarding accidents and radiation leaks, because if we have radioactive substance at Den, I would hate for something to happen, and accidents happen. They're just, so what kind of assurances do we have? And then also, one of the things that I learned as I was studying this is the decommissioning of, like, there's no actual technology out there from what I've studied. And once again, I am not a subject matter expert on this. This is me just asking around. Literally, I'm in my master's, so I use my master's classes and my professors to help me with this. There's not, from what I've studied, there's not technology to formally decommission these sites. And that was what was so hard about Rocky Flats. Is it technically got decommissioned, for anyone who remembers that. It's still sitting there. That radioactive waste is still at Rocky Flats. It's there. Because we don't have a way to decommission this type of radioactive waste. So is that in the RFP to figure out how we, like, they would have to bring solutions to, if we wanted to move away from this, how we would decommission that?
Yes.
Yep, that's in there. Okay. So those are, and can we see the RFP so I could read it? Okay. So I would send it to the whole committee so that we could see it. And then when you're talking in your presentation, you mentioned that, so most of these little SMRs, they're to produce megawatts. So you would get one that is your ultimate goal to get to 400 megawatts from the presentation, or you want to build an SMR where you could start slower, for lack of a better word right now, because I'm a little bit tired this week. I'm thinking of a Lego set. So if you had a Lego set and you had one piece of block that had 100 megawatts, you could add another piece of block that had 100 megawatts, another piece of block that had 100 megawatts. I'm super undersimplifying this, but that's how my brain is thinking about it. Is that what you're attempting to do, or can you explain that to me a little bit better?
The modular nature of this and the stackability of this allows us to add reactors as our demand dictates.
Got it. And then what wattage would you want to start out with? What's the RFP asking for? Like 100, 200, 300, 200? And what's the max you want to go up to?
We think it would be about 75 megawatts to start. But I think it's important to know, we don't know that we do want to build this.
Yeah, no, I get
that. And that's why we're doing the feasibility.
I get that. That's what the whole, now I'm understanding what the feasibility study is. And that's why it would be helpful for me to read it, so then I can digest that. Because obviously I'm using Lego blocks to figure this out. I have to use everything I have.
The Lego analogy is a good one. Yeah. That is modular construction. That's what it is.
Okay. So those are just... And then, when does the RFP close?
It closes...
I don't think I saw that on the presentation.
It would be in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, we have it out there for about 90 days.
About 90 days. Mm-hmm. And then how many days do you get to look through all of the proposals?
As much time as we need.
As much time as you need. And then before you select a vendor, would you come back and give us an update?
Absolutely.
Okay, I would just ask Madam Chair that they come back once the selection process is closed. Mm-hmm. Then come back to us and kind of, I know that it's super confidential during those, mm-hmm. but just kind of understand what did we learn, as much as you could share with us. Sure. So then that when it's not just you coming back and saying, hey, this is the vendor that we selected, so that we could be more figuring out the process. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No. Our plan, as I mentioned, is to come back with the results of the study.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So those are my questions, and I probably will be reaching out to you once I read the RFP, because then I can look through the research that I have to make sure. And I would love it if you added the cooling, because that's mm-hmm. going to be super key. Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, mm-hmm. President Senegal. Councilwoman Alvidrez, followed by Councilman Flynn.
Thank you. What RFP system or platform are you using now? Is it just public on your website, or is there a platform that you all use?
It's BidNet.
BidNet, yeah. Okay. Is that a paid subscription?
I believe it is.
Okay. Do we have access to that?
You can go on our website and look at it right now.
We'll
provide it to the committee.
Okay. And was there a minority women-owned business goal associated with that RFP?
There was no goal associated with it. It did go through DISPO, though.
Oh, okay. And they just decided there wasn't enough providers in that space?
Correct. Yes.
Okay. I definitely want to elevate my colleagues. If this was in my district, Councilwoman Gilmore's thoughts, I would be very concerned as well. And I'm assuming that this study will also include how safe is it to be next to homes, mm-hmm. What is a safe buffer zone, and all of those types of things. A lot of my questions have been asked. So I'm just reading through them to see which ones haven't. And it sounds like you have no idea what the cost would be, but of
the reactor?
Right.
Not right now.
Okay. I would, also say we have Ruby Hill Park in District 7, to your point about unsafe spaces where you can't even put a stake in the ground and it's a public park. So we definitely don't want more of those spaces. Will this RFP include a comparison data of what kind of power, at what cost, and what environmental impact, and will it compare to like solar and microgrids and other things?
I don't know that we specified that as one of our questions, but we can add it to the ask.
That would be great. And do we know if will the feasibility study tell us if this will trigger like a NEPA environmental impact study? Yes. Or is that part of this process?
No, that's in there to advise us on that.
And I assume the plan is for DEN to pay for all of these costs, including if this were to move forward to actually happening.
For the study,
yes.
For the actual reactor, again, we haven't decided, whether we want to build one or not. Mm-hmm. So it's contingent on what we find out.
Okay. All right. That was all I had. Thank you, Committee Chair. Thank you.
So I take that back. There is some language in there about comparing it to our existing electrical costs.
Okay. not existing, but to other energy sources that are also considered clean energy.
Yeah, that specifically is not in there, but right. We can add it to a task.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Councilman Flynn, followed by Pro Tem Ramona Campbell. I don't know, actually, to be honest.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Councilwoman Gilmore, when you brought up the Rocky Mountain Arsenal, that's where the government from the 40s, I think, almost to the 60s, was making nerve gas, sarin, mustard gas, and other chemical weapons. And then they leased it to Shell Chemical to make pesticides. And out in Europe, part of town, Shell was injecting the wastewater 2.5 miles deep in a cased well below the bedrock. But you might remember it triggered earthquakes. So, interesting history to that. This is going to be underground.
Yeah, that's our current.
So my first thought was, why don't you just use one of those many underground buildings that all the conspiracies told us 30 years ago existed out there?
That's what we're saying.
There's aliens living down there.
That was the underground New World Order prison, if I recall correctly. But on a serious note, I'm going to try and understand the broad concept of what this is for. Is this to take over and replace Xcel as the power source for the airport, or is it to supplement if Xcel can't provide all the energy we would need? It would supplement the gap, the delta, between what Xcel can provide right now, which, as we know, is not adequate for growth out there, or is it going to completely replace? Because if our needs are 40 megawatts and it provides 75, we can tell Xcel, thank you, and we'll see you down the road.
Well, let me say that this is not, we don't envision a hostile takeover of Xcel.
No. Yeah. Not that we would take it over, but we would replace them as our energy. They have two feeds into the airport, north and south.
Right.
Would this replace it?
Right now we are thinking that it would supplement.
Okay.
When we look at our capital improvement program, in many ways, we are moving faster than our demand. And when you look out over the next 20 years and the projects that we need to build to accommodate the increased number of passengers, we are exceeding what we see that can be provided. And so to supplement that, part of the intent here is to supplement and to not slow down our growth here at Denver International Airport. Okay. So that's my primary thought here.
When in the presentation it talks about being able to supply power to tenants,
yes,
for example, the consolidated rental car facility. Would we establish a system of rates and charges so that Avis and Budget and Hertz and all would then pay us for the use of that energy?
I think that remains to be seen. I don't want to say that we will, do that, but it's a good problem to have adequate power.
Sure.
To be able to accommodate the developers as a sort of an added bonus, but the primary reason is to satisfy the demand for this economic engine
for our own facilities. Right. But of course, a lot of tenant facilities are just interwoven inextricably and not separable. When a concessionaire opens up, and they plug into the system. They're on the airport grid, I guess.
Right.
But certainly, we wouldn't provide that for free if we were providing power to Hertz and Avis and the restaurants and all, we would charge them instead of Xcel charging them, correct?
Potentially. That's one of the things that we've asked in the RFP specifically is what are the rules around the PUC?
And that was my next question.
Yeah, and what does that look like moving forward?
But yeah, that was my next question. Does this incur, and does this make us a utility subject to PUC oversight?
We don't know.
Okay.
And that's part of the
Can we ask that in the RFP?
It's already in there.
Oh,
Yeah, but getting back to your original question about replacing versus supplementing Xcel, I think what we're envisioning is a microgrid at the airport that would still be connected to Xcel for redundancy. So we could build redundancy by adding more modules, and we could stay connected to the grid so that if something happened to one of those modules, we could still draw power from Xcel.
So unlike if a solar array on the roof of my house, I'm not feeding excess into the grid. It's isolated only for use at the airport. Yeah. Great.
Intermittent outages and things like that. Yeah. The ability to have a 24/7, 365 power source versus the outages that we've seen all over this country and the world, actually.
Who do you see, not by name, of course, but who do you see as the potential bidders on the RFP? Are they engineering companies? Are they nuclear physicists? Are they, who are the bidders on this, without naming any specifically?
There are a number of engineering companies that have nuclear divisions. Okay. That we think would pursue such work. We're going to find out in short order who is interested in this as this news goes out.
Have we had any pre-bid, pre-release conferences with any of the potential bidders?
We've had a lot of inquiries. Okay. Yes.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
It's
me.
It's you.
Thank you for the presentation, and I appreciate the innovation aspect of what's being presented and thinking forward. I think that's on brand for the airport and the direction that you've always been going. A lot of the questions that I had have been asked, so I appreciate, because I was wondering who would bid on this. And who has that kind of level of expertise to be able to do this feasibility study. My question would be a little bit more around the RFP for feasibility, and you said that it would include the cost modeling component for alternative energy as well as for a build out.
So that is not currently, the comparison to other green energy is not currently in the proposed questions that we put out. But if we get to a contract, we could include that in a task order.
Okay. Thank you. My wondering around the RFP is we get proposals back. There's a feasibility study that happens, but always with that option of this is feasibility, knowing that one of the options could be it's not feasible.
Yeah.
So we're just still open to that kind of wide array. It's not because I think sometimes when there is feasibility and we could do a contract and kind of moving down that road, I think that it's always good to always remain we're doing this because it may not be something that we can do. And I think that's really important to be able to if it doesn't meet water, considerations, or if it doesn't meet, safety or all of those other pieces, knowing that that technology is out there, however, just not feasible. I guess I just want to be able to hold that space for that consideration.
Absolutely, and that is our plan. There are off-ramps to this. We would not build this without off-ramps. And so if it becomes infeasible, then we wouldn't do it. You mentioned innovation. It is innovative, but it's also, in our minds, a necessity. And I'm talking 20, 30 years out. Lest we build to accommodate 100, 120 million and do not have the power resources to accommodate that. So not only is it innovative, it is a necessity that we think about future alternative energy options, not just at the airport, but in all infrastructure modes all over the world. New York just went down. Their transit system went down just about a week and a half ago, an outage. We mentioned Heathrow, we mentioned Madrid. So it's in our mind, we are doing what responsible infrastructure professionals do, and that is look out 20 to 30 years out.
So are you also exploring other alternative energy solutions beyond this particular one for the SMR? Like, will there be other contracts that you're going to be looking at, or feasibility studies for other energy sources?
Well, as I mentioned, on August 21st, we bring in you Solar 10, and that is an additional solar array of, I believe, 18 megawatts. And so we will continue to look at opportunities. We have been the most, and I think I can say this, the most aggressive airport in the world looking for alternative energy options. We have the largest performance energy contract in the state of Colorado that is going to save us, I don't have the figures, but millions of dollars over the next 20 years or so. So we will not cease in our pursuit of additional energy options. We're not going to stop doing that.
Well, it doesn't look like we can. I mean, I think the airport is growing and those alternative energy sources are going to be needed. Not only, you know, to look at the feasibility for this, but for alternative energy as well.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I do have a few questions.
Sure.
I wanted to circle back to Council President Sandoval's question around scalability. I'm not sure I heard an answer about how much this tech can be scaled up in terms of generating capacity.
Yeah. So there, we mentioned that we want to start with possibly 75 megawatts.
Mm-hmm.
A 75 megawatt reactor with the ability to scale up as our demand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right now, I believe that we could go to about 924 megawatts with multiple reactors. But as fast as the technology is moving,
mm-hmm.
in the next 2 or 3 years, that may increase exponentially. And so the ability, you know, one of the big benefits is the ability to scale up and stack these SMRs. And so that is sort of the upper that we know of right now, but it could increase.
Okay. When you say, actually, that was really helpful. I think I understood it. Thank you so much, Phil. I appreciate it. How would this interact with the franchise agreement with Xcel?
That the city has. I don't think it impacts at all.
Okay.
I'll ask my folks, but I don't think it impacts at all.
I don't know.
Even if you were able to sell the energy at some point, to Councilman Flynn's question, would that then potentially?
It could.
Okay. Is it in the RFP? should we be exploring it?
Well, we have to find a way to word that question, I guess.
Fair.
But we can ask.
Okay, thank you.
There are some questions, proposed questions that we put out there that talk about how this works with Xcel. As an example, what would be needed to sell excess capacity back to Xcel or other interested parties as a microgrid, a good solution for SMR? There are things that are around your question. I don't know that we have your specific question in there.
Okay.
But again, we can put that in a task.
Yeah, I'd just be curious as to just to open the conversation.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, y'all know, I've told y'all, I'm really excited about the opportunity for municipal ownership. And like, if that's something that we can do in the future, I think we probably should at least look at it. So does this include the feasibility of the construction of transmission infrastructure or a horizontal infrastructure that was mentioned earlier, or is this a separate process?
Yeah, there is, we do talk about the transmission of the energy. And really, that was in relation to cost more than anything.
Both
with potential federal grants or state grants and without. Right? We want to understand what that cost modeling looks like both ways. So yes, there is some transmission stuff in there, but again, we haven't issued any task orders to get our specific questions in.
Got it. Can you go just a bit deeper on the cost? I don't know if I understand what you mean by that.
So when you talk about transmission, what we're asking our potential partner is, what does the cost modeling look like to build out a reactor and the transmission lines that are required, both with federal funding and without federal funding?
Got it. And would that be for the full build out, that 900 number that was just mentioned, or?
No. So I think that the way that I think about this is if you think about the old Coca-Cola glass bottles that came in the six pack, right? Mm-hmm. You place another Coke bottle in the container as you build this out. So I think what we would look to do is build out this six container building.
Got it.
And put one Coke bottle in it at a time.
Okay, that's very helpful. Did you want to add anything?
No. That's as elementary as we can get.
So could the city use the revenues generated by the SMRs in the event the electricity is sold offsite?
Say that again.
Could the city use revenues generated by the SMRs in the event that electricity is sold offsite?
Well, I think we would have to look at any diversion of revenue provisions that we are under. But for example, the development that we that could possibly be sold power, I think the taxes would go into the general fund for the city.
That's what I wanted to know.
Yeah.
The taxes, not the revenue, right?
The taxes, we'll start with that. And there may be some residuals, but our sale of electricity to a developer, I believe, would have to go back into airport coffers to not violate diversion of revenue provisions. However, the taxes from the development that we would realize sooner, along with the press release that we just put out saying we're going to actually outfit the parcels with utilities. That could be realized in the general fund.
Okay, thank you. I really appreciate this presentation, and just echoing the concerns of Councilmember Gilmore and other folks around the table, I'm constantly fighting to get the city to engage meaningfully with my constituents, and I recognize and respect the frustration at this point. I also have to just name the data centers because I am very concerned about like us going in that direction, but I'm very excited that we are exploring this. I think the time is now for us to figure out what we might need to do, and so I appreciate that you all are exploring that. I do have members back in the queue, and so Councilmember Gilmore and then President Sandoval.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate, Phil, you referencing back to the commitment by yourself to me earlier, and you did say it around this table that whatever, you know, with the NEPA study, with other initiatives out at the airport, that you are fully prepared for the airport to pick up the cost incurred by making sure that DEN is complying with the EPA standards for environmental protections as of 12/31/24. Before this new administration took over. And so you have made that commitment. I wanted to go back and look at the RFP to see if that was part of the RFP, because even though they're doing this work, DEN does not have the capabilities of having a whole nother team staying with the former EPA regulations. And so if you're looking at getting federal dollars to do this, federal dollars aren't going to be able to pay for compliance with EPA regulations previously to when they were, you know, before and where they're lowered down now. And so I wanted to go back and look at the RFP, but when I look for the RFP, it's locked behind BidNet and you have to be a it's for only registered members only. And so I want to see in that RFP some update, since you've talked about being able to update the RFP here, fully having transparency with the businesses that are contemplating bidding on this RFP, that they're fully aware that DEN is going to require them to at least make sure that the feasibility study includes in complying with the EPA regulations from 2024, not now. And that's very, very important, as you know, my colleague reminded me about the series of earthquakes that were triggered by the pumping of that water and it causing earthquakes in Denver. I mean, the Rocky Mountain News and Denver Post covered it. We have the old articles and news reports about people in Montbello and Park Hill. There were earthquakes during that time. And so, and then with the RFP, since I wasn't able to see it, I'd like to ensure, have you add with the feasibility study, because this is in the news, because you just had a press conference, I want to know that simultaneously this vendor or somebody else, you might have to release another RFP to have somebody simultaneously doing community outreach with the surrounding neighborhood now. Like, release it this week or put it in the RFP, because if at the end of this year, when it closes at 10/6 in October, you're only going to be before us again asking us to approve the contract. And that's not appropriate, especially when we're talking about environmental justice. That is not appropriate. It needs to be happening simultaneously, if not this company doing it. And so I ask for those as well. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah, just a quick comment. In terms of EPA regulations and things, regardless of whether we get federal dollars in the form of grants or whatever, we are committed to paying for community outreach out of DEN coffers, right?
So you're gonna start paying for community outreach right now? You're gonna do
we don't have the information. It doesn't come until after the feasibility study is done to actually go out with a degree of knowledge that we need to have from the information that comes from the study. So I think it makes sense for us to go out. We can talk now about that, but we don't have enough information to go out to the public until I think we get information from the study. So that's one. But we're committed to doing that, whether it's in this RFP or not, maybe it's separate or whatever. So we're committed to doing that, and we do have it in the RFP outreach, and so that's in there right now. In terms of, I didn't know you could not see that behind BidNet, but we'll make sure you get copies of that of the RFP itself. We'll give it to the whole committee. So we're completely committed to also coming here earlier. During during the time of the study, it does not have to be at the end of the study where we come to you and say, we're committed to coming here every week if we have to. We're always open to that.
All right.
So we will do that.
Okay. I look forward to working with you.
Make a commitment to come to Montbello and Green Valley Ranch, because the people I represent aren't right here. And so I would ask publicly that the airport pull together a community-wide meeting, and that we have a community-wide meeting in District 11, and you can share what you shared with the press today next door and talk about what you talked about today. And so I'll follow up with y'all after this, and we can pull folks out, same as we did for Coca-Cola and Pena on that one, and so have the conversation. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And we can work together as well, Director Washington, to figure out what the cadence will be for you all to return to this body.
So thank you. One last question I have. So currently right now, do you have solar panels? And how many wattages does the solar panels provide?
I may ask Scott, where's Scott at, to come up. We have one of the largest solar arrays in this country at any airport. And so he can talk about the megawatts that we have there.
Yeah, thank you very much for the question, Council President. I'm Scott Morrissey. I'm the Senior Vice President of Sustainability at the airport. And to your question, and as Phil said, we've invested quite a bit over the course of the last, at this point, 18 years in a variety of different solar projects. We have about 50 megawatts of solar installed on site right now. As Phil mentioned, we're going to be coming back to you in 2 weeks to talk about the latest project, and so continuing to look for opportunities to develop additional renewable energy projects.
And for the 50 watts, does it go into a bank, and like on cold days, you can still use it, or do you use that for 50 watts like every day and you get depleted? Does that make sense?
Well, so the 50 watts is the generating, the 50 megawatts is the generating capacity of the assets. And so when Phil was talking about 45 megawatts as the peak energy demand, but that's only when the solar panels are producing. And so the percentage of the overall consumption of the airport is smaller, but at that time when the panels are producing, it's directly powering our facilities, or if it's producing more than the individual meters where they're interconnected can accommodate, it then gets fed back onto the grid.
Yep. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other comments from you all? Everyone's out of the queue. You're good? Well, thank you all so much for coming. It's, again, very exciting to have this before our committee and the opportunity to just dialogue and see what you all find. So looking forward to working with you all as we move forward. This was just an update, so it doesn't need approval. We have 6 items on consent. No one has called anything off. And with that, we're adjourned.
Thank you.